position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
You're now in the Essential Zone, where we seek to be informative, inspirational, enlightening, and dynamic. But more importantly, we seek to be fair and balanced. There comes a time when the game tolerates no spectators, only players. There comes a time when we must recognize that our individual aspirations shape our collective destiny. There comes a time when getting in the game, despite the risks, despite the challenges, regardless of the cost, is simply the right thing to do. There comes a time when we must find our hearts, find our soul, and pursue our purpose for the greater good of all, for country, for humanity. There comes a time when we must manifest our true greatness. Yes, there comes a time, and that time is now. So let's get down to the essentials. The Essentials, serious radio for serious people committed to advancing the national conversation. And good evening and welcome to The Essentials. Welcome to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. I'm your host, Hubert Edwards, and we are here on The Essentials, The Reset. This evening, as usual, we are going to have ourselves a wonderful conversation. We always do. We are having ourselves this series, this discussion around independence, the road beyond 50. And we are gathering different guests. We are into our fourth week. And we are asking different questions. We are asking persons, how do you see the Bahamas? Where do you think the Bahamas is going to be? Are we doing enough? Are we effective? Are there things which we are not celebrating enough? Are there some areas which we have made missteps and some things which we need to learn from? What about the ordinary individual in the street, the ordinary man? Is the Bahamas growing? And are we leaving some people behind? I think these are important questions as we reflect on 50 years of independence, 50 years of, over 50 years of majority rule, certainly 50 years of self-determination. There's a lot that we still have to do. There's a far way that we have to go. But 50 years is a milestone. It's a jubilee. It's worthy of celebration. But it's also not a bad time for us to pause, to reflect, to ask ourselves hard questions, honest questions, accurate questions, to ask ourselves by having conversations with a broad array of individuals so that we can get the benefit of variety. And so this evening, having gone through our introduction, spoken a bit about economics, look at the country through the eyes of culture and religion. This evening, we are going to have a conversation with a young lady who kind of, straddled all of those categories in many ways. But more importantly, from my perspective, maybe not hers, but from my perspective, she's my friend. And importantly, again, from my perspective, she has a heart for people, for growth, for development. And even more importantly than that, she not only speaks to these things, but her life, her work, everything that she does, evidences her serious commitment, not just to her own personal development, though that is important, that is the means by which she helps others to develop themselves. But certainly, she is, in my mind, in my view, one of those unsung heroes, one of those nation builders, one of those which, though you may not know her today, a lot of people know her, but though you particularly may not know her today, tomorrow, the next 5 years, the next 10 years, her name will be on the tip of your tongue every single moment. She will be remembered for the work she does now with youth. She will be remembered for the work she does with adults and businesses. And she will be remembered for the work she's doing with survivors of cancer. I'm introducing to you, coming back to The Essentials, you've been here a couple of times, none other than Duquesa Dean, or I must more correctly upgrade that to Duquesa D. Bain. Welcome to The Essentials.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here. So humbled by your introduction. And of course, we are friends. Of course.
Definitely. And it's always a pleasure to have you here. Duquesa, it's always a pleasure to interact and to share with you. We want to start where we have to start. We're talking about a lot of things, but against the backdrop of independence. And so I just want to quickly, you know, let people know who you are and then give us an idea. You know, let's take a little bit of a nostalgic walk down the road. How did you see, how have you experienced the Bahamas over the last few years?
Well, I am a humble woman from Baintown. I want to say that first. I grew up in the Farrington Road area. Vividly remember my young days in those areas. I too celebrated 50 years this year. And so the country and I are celebrating at the exact same time. And growing up in an environment like the one that I did gave me the opportunity to see many different viewpoints of our country, even as a young girl, coming from a middle-class family, having the opportunity to see the varying lifestyles of those who were upper class and those who were just below the poverty line as well, all mixed together, coming together a lot of times in harmony back in those days. Today, I use the experiences of my past to predominantly help women, even though my work can touch men. I predominantly help women and teens navigate the journey of life.
And when you look back, Duquesa, over the last, well, we can't say 50 years, okay, you don't know the first year, you were just, but, you know, over the last 45 years or so, the last 40 years or so, 30 years, what are some of the things which stand out to you from a national perspective? Maybe moments, not necessarily of national import, but certainly which impacted you as an individual?
Well, I vividly remember being a very young girl watching one of my uncles in particular get dressed for work. At that time, he was proud to work at what is now known at what was then known as the Nassau Beach Hotel. And I vividly remember him. He was a waiter at the hotel. And one of the very first impressions I got about National Pride actually stemmed from inside my home, where he was so delighted and fascinated to, one, be able to work, two, be able to work in the hospitality industry, and three, be able to serve in what is known as our number one industry from a place of pride, from a place of promoting the Bahamas, from a place of just being ecstatic that the country was independent. And as a result of that, it opened the doors for so many opportunities for people who were young then. And for me, that stood out as national pride, because this sense of showing up for work, ironed and pressed and taking the time to really groom oneself, to show up, to represent himself in a world full of opportunities, left the impression on me that our personal brands are so important no matter what we do, no matter what positions we hold, because we all impact our nation. It doesn't matter what work we do. The pride that we take in what we do supersedes all of that. And so that was my really first impression with noticing how pride for living in a country that allowed such freedoms and opportunities touched him, that it transferred to me. As I look at how we have advanced as a nation, I also have a sense of pride at how far we have come in many respects, and yet at the same time, recognize that there are many lessons that we can learn from. I'm ecstatic about the fact that women have more rights in general, even though I'm a traditional woman and prefer to hold that traditional role. I'm excited at the work that women like Janet Boswick did to advance women, to bring about more attention to social services, more attention to working women and working wives. And all of those things were inspirations to me as well. Seeing one woman on a quest to advance so many other women And then not just by herself, but by connecting with other women and helping them through a community advance their lives as well, was something that I recognized as national pride. Opportunities for all. It may not be equal opportunities, but opportunities for all and consideration for others. Those touched me as well. I was also very touched by the loyalty that many Bahamians had toward the very first prime minister of our country. There was this persona and personality. He had a special way of connecting with people. And, it was, again, a sense of pride that there was someone that could rise from among us to take this leadership and be able to connect with the people from all walks of life and inspire them as well. So, and then like one moment of great pride I had was watching him on international news, just really asking the question, if you can't keep the drug lords out, how do you expect our little nation to do it? And I was like, yes, that's standing up, that's showing up. And that ignited a sense of pride in me as well.
Yeah. As you mentioned, two very, very important individuals in the life of this country. We are actually seeking to figure out how we can have Janet Boswick as a part of this particular series. And, we're waiting to get some feedback on that. But certainly the first Prime Minister, Sir Lyndon Pinlin. And I remember vividly, I'm aware, obviously I saw that much later, of the adventure you spoke about. I have my own take on that, my own private take. It was celebrated nonetheless, who they think they're talking to. But the fact of the matter is, those are individuals who would have worked hard and shaped the lives of, to shape the life of persons within the country. What's important, though, the question where I want to take you is that those are individuals who represent the bridge between pre-majority rule and an independent Bahamas. And you spoke of the pride with which you saw your uncle getting ready to go to work. And in those early days, that carryover, being free from some of the pressures, if you will, for want of a better word, being free from some of the vagaries of the pre-majority rule era, and now seeing themselves as young nation builders, must have been really a moment of high pride. Must have been a time when the energy was electrifying, where persons were now seeing themselves working for the betterment of the country, which is in turn the betterment of themselves, with full ownership of exactly what comes out at the end of the day.
Yes, absolutely. He was one example of that, Hubert. And as a little girl, I also remember watching another young man that was a part of my family at the time, advancing through the hospitality industry. And I was inspired to know that a Bahamian, someone with deep roots in our country, could rise through the ranks of general manager to vice president, and to now even be holding president of a whole hotel association, just knowing that these opportunities existed within our country and that people that live, work, breathe here would have the chance to put themselves forward to be considered for these high level types of jobs. As a young girl, that was an inspiration to me. And just also watching him navigate his career, leaving the country, going to places like Jamaica and other places in the Caribbean to work, was again a source of pride that a Bahamian could step outside of the borders of the Bahamas and make a mark in the hospitality industry in the Caribbean and be able to stand shoulder to shoulder with others who were just as successful. And so for me, that was national pride as well. You know, individuals that were developing themselves and then coming back to the country and giving their knowledge and time and wisdom to continue to build what is our number one industry, which is the tourism industry. So those were all inspirations during my young days. And there's another thing that I vividly remember as a child. I remember many Independence days, going out to the fort where we would plant the pole, where we would sing with our school choir. There were many, many years of being in Oaksfield Primary School. I definitely remember going out there, doing the conch style and all of those dances as we celebrated independence. And that, again, was a sense of pride. This was back in the day, you know, 10, 11, when I was much younger. But it was impressionable for me at that particular time, because as a young girl, just seeing all of these people come together in peace, in unity, in harmony, celebrating independence. So that for me inspired me to want to contribute to my own country. It was a sense of, okay, we fought for something. Somebody before me had to fight to give me the opportunities that I have today, and I don't want to take those for granted. And so even as I think back on those days of going out to the tattoo and participating in the choir or participating in one of the dance groups, just being involved and being a part of the ceremony left marks on my heart that I think that they will remain forever.
And then I fully understand and I fully appreciate the way you see that. And, you know, I did not have that opportunity here in the Bahamas, but I have had the opportunity of living vicariously through my daughters who are and son, who have participated in those same celebration, the daughters as dancers and the son as a drummer. And just simply the effort of getting them, making sure that they go to practice, yeah, and so on and so forth. But more importantly, on the night, seeing them actually participating, it does something to your heart. It does something, yeah, which kind of helped to bind you to a sense of national pride, a sense, yeah, of belonging. And certainly that ought to be much easier for persons like yourself. I just want to go back to the individual you were describing. I might be wrong, but I think this is Mr. Sandy Sands.
Yes, it is.
Yes. An individual whose name is worthy of mention from a national perspective, individual who I have had the pleasure of interacting with because he has sat on a couple of boards which in the financial services, but certainly one who has shown in a very serious way what it means to be a journeyman, but in a very strategic and progressive way, and an individual who has always carried himself in such a way where he demonstrate national pride, where he demonstrate, yeah, excellence, where he demonstrate commitment to his craft and commitment to his sector. And certainly we use this opportunity to say, you know, big up to Mr. Sandy Sands for your contribution and all of those persons who contribute, especially to the tourism industry, the biggest industry in the Bahamas, who have then taken something from fledgling. It was the mainstay back in 1973, but certainly it has grown leaps and bounds since then. And the fact that it is done at the hands of indigenous, for want of a better word, persons, that, yeah, is worthy of celebration. But when you think about where you're coming from, the young girl over the hill, being town, to yes, a middle-class family, but as you look around and you would have interacted with your peers at Oaksfield Primary, the standard of living and the social mobility, is the growth of the country, is the growth of the country sufficiently all-embracing of all of your peers and those who come after? Is the country growing in such a way where enough persons, more than a significant majority, is really benefiting, or are we leaving some persons behind?
Well, first I'd like to say that I believe that we have come a long way as it relates to looking out for people that are outside of our social classes, whether that's upper or lower. There have been some strides made in that area. However, I would also like to say that a lot more can be done for the advancement of people in every socioeconomic bracket. I believe that some people are being left behind. I believe that more can be done to support those who are. I believe that more social level work is definitely required in some of our inner cities and even some of our middle class and upper class areas, because, you know, if it doesn't matter where you sit on the economic line, the issues are somewhat similar. You still have some of the challenges outside of the basic need being met, which is like shelter, food, clothes, which are all very important. And so certain classes don't have to worry about those things. But as it relates to some of the other mental health issues, the other community building issues, definitely more support is needed. Now, for the mother or the child or the family that doesn't have enough to eat, I believe that more can be done, but not just from a government perspective, from a community perspective as well. Mm-hmm. There was a time when I grew up where communities supported each other. There was a time where you could walk to anybody's home in your neighborhood and you would be offered a meal, you'd be offered a place to sleep. There was just more community-mindedness back in the day. So I believe that our government has, or governments, all of them actually, have had the opportunity to do more to help advance people generally in life. And I do believe that our communities have also eroded, and that as communities, we can do more collectively to support the people that live and reside where we also live and reside. Now, I know that that's probably idealistic. It could also be that it's just wishful thinking, because as the more we advance as a country, I believe the more our moral and ethical lines are they decline. That's just my personal opinion. I believe that the more we advance, the more people look out for themselves versus looking out for community or building community. I know that we also, regardless of where we are in our lives, in our work, in our family, doesn't matter, we still have this black crab syndrome that we definitely need to work on eradicating and trying to come together to work with each other, to build each other, to build our communities, and to build our country. Can the government do better? All of them could do better. All of them could have done better. Could our social services be better? Absolutely. Could our outreach programs be better? Could our healthcare be better? Absolutely. Every single facet of what makes our country what it is, I believe more can be done. Now, here's the thing here, but I believe that more was done previously. I believe in days gone by, there was more passion and more of a desire to help advance people, but some way along the journey of politics, and when you're getting into politics, the benefits to individual, and I just personally believe that the individual comes before the community now in many, many instances. So there is a lot that can be done. Many people are being left behind, and there are organizations and people who are doing their best to support those people that are either underserved or that are just not served at all, because there's a difference between underserved and not being served at all. And I believe that there's a lot more that can be done, but do we have the resources? Do we have the financial ability to do so? And also, how much responsibility of that actually sits with the government? And is it possible for us to work together to rebuild our national pride, rebuild our communities, and work together to help each other advance?
You know, as you speak, and I'm listening to you talk earlier about the early times and the development of the country, and now you touch on some of the social issues, and there is also, you kind of thread through that, the economic advancement. Economic advancement seems to be in many ways alienating. I have described it as this. There was a time when everyone had a desire to wear shoes. Yeah, we were all barefooted. And so we were all together. Then came the point where everybody had shoes, and now the decision is, which shoes should I wear? And then you get to the point where persons can now easily afford shoes. And shoes has just been used as an analogy here, right?
Yeah.
And suddenly persons start thinking, well, I don't want to wear the same shoes as you. I need to differentiate myself by wearing a different type, a better type of shoes. And then all of a sudden, within those lines, the same fervor, the same energy, the same cohesiveness that was experienced, which gave the sense of nationality, which gave the sense of togetherness, is no longer there, because we find ourselves now, I think, well entrenched in an era where individuality, individualism, the me-ism, the I-ism, is more important than the overall well-being of us all. Your thoughts?
Yeah. I absolutely agree with you. I hold the belief that when you are in a situation, a survival situation, there are times when you have to save yourself first. Mm-hmm. And once you save yourself, then you go back to get others. But I am also of the belief that there are times when we can survive together and we can help each other move forward together, mm-hmm. upward, onwards, right? We can help each other move forward together. It really depends on individual circumstances. But I also recognize that the more we achieve, the more we become, the more money we get, we do want to move away from certain atmospheres, certain environments, certain communities. And so we believe that we're advancing our lives. But it's also important to be reminded of where we come from and the people that still exist there so that we can do whatever it is that we can, even if it means that we are now taking the shoes that we are no longer using, just going back to your analogy, but they are still, in really great condition, and giving those to somebody that doesn't have shoes or that may be wearing a worn pair of shoes instead of just keeping a ton of shoes in your closet and you're only wearing three or four of them. Mm-hmm. So I believe that we definitely see that break where there are people that are just getting, moving forward with their lives and becoming more successful, and it's just focused on them and their families. But I do believe that we still have some people that trickle through our communities who are still working, even though they are advancing their lives, they are still working within their communities to help each other. But we do need more of that.
Yeah, and certainly,
we need more of that.
Yeah, definitely. And certainly, some of the individuals who have become super, super successful do a whole lot quietly to help many
yes.
persons. They don't always speak about it. They don't always broadcast it. But
yes.
certainly there are a lot of persons out there who, if not for their effort, other persons would struggle. We're having a conversation yes. with Dequessa Dean, Dequessa Bain, and we're talking about life in the Bahamas, the early days, how she saw the Bahamas growing up, how the country is growing, the national pride, the pride that she saw in family members, which she observed about persons who have left the shores of the Bahamas, gone abroad, come back and contributed significantly to the country. And so we want to, on the other side of this break, start to ask some slightly different questions. We want to know, what are the things that we ought to be celebrating, which we don't celebrate enough? What are some of the things that we need to talk about more? Because one of the challenges that we certainly have, and is one of the things which I do not like to see, is oftentimes too much time is spent talking badly about the country. And there are things to be celebrated. But if you do not focus on those good things, you're going to be challenged. You're listening to The Essentials, The Reset. We're having our series, the independent series, if you will, The Road Beyond 50. When we come back, we will still be talking with Mrs. Bain, Dequessa Dean Bain. But you can also join us. The numbers are 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259, on our text line, 422-4796. Don't move. Come right back.
Always on the go? Missed the show? You can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM or by entering the name of your favorite show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere, anytime, all day.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Next Level Solutions. Next Level Solutions. Solutions. At Next Level Solutions, we assist companies and organizations to understand and strategically resolve governance, risk, compliance, regulatory, finance, and operational challenges, maximize their performance, and grow. Next Level Solutions, a dynamic consultancy built on experiential knowledge. For further details on our service offerings, visit nlsolutionsbahamas.com or call 376-8951. Next Level Solutions. Practical solutions delivered.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Lord, where you think this man is, man?
And welcome back to The Essentials. These little children are crying out for their pa. So we're having this conversation on our Road Beyond 50. Our guest is Miss Duquesa D. Bain. And we're talking about the good times. We're talking about the yesteryear. We're talking about the today. My question to you, Duquesa, is, are we adequately celebrating the achievements of the country? Is the country adequately celebrating its people? Are we too sometimes focused on celebrating a narrow slice of the population and missing some of the great contributors to national development?
Well, I can say that over the recent years, what I've seen is more private entities celebrating. You know, for instance, just recently, I think there was like the Gospel Awards for celebration of gospel artists, and that was put on by a private group of people. You have other award ceremonies that are put on by private companies or private groups of people that celebrate the punch. Others are making you up the under 30, under 40. You have, you know, women's empowerment movements that are celebrating other women for what they do. So I do believe that there are pockets of the society that are celebrating other people. Mm-hmm. From the perspective of nationally, this has been really beautiful to see 2023, the celebration of the country as a whole with all of the various events that are on the road to 50 happening and opportunities for Bahamian people to come together or highlighting Bahamians for the work that they've done. You see billboards all around with faces of people all around the capital and celebrating how they have helped the country to grow. So there is some of that, and I want to congratulate like the Road to 50 committee. I want to congratulate all of those other private entities that pull together to celebrate the work that Bahamians are doing within the community. We do need more of that. There are many unsung heroes. There was a time when we also had unsung heroes awards, but I don't see that happening anymore. And there are some people who don't want to be awarded, like you indicated earlier. I do believe, though, that we should foster a culture of recognition, and we should foster a culture of rewarding people for how they help to advance our nation as well. We see that, you know, if we go to the Olympics and we win bronze, silver, or gold, you have a lot of celebration of the contributions of those athletes, and they are rewarded as well for the, you know, the, how they put the Bahamas on the map. I do believe that there are other people that are working who are not in politics, who are not in religion, that are doing a great work within their communities and their networks to help others to build careers or professions for younger generations who don't want the traditional. So I think we can do more. We're doing some of it, Hubert, but I don't think from a national level it is enough.
Mm-hmm. Are we having the right national conversations in that? Are we having sufficiently? I'm sure we can point to any number of right national conversations, but are we having them sufficiently often, deep enough, clear enough, honest enough, that is going to help to propel that which you speak of, and also to bring other persons into the fold of saying, hey, be motivated, be inspired, be troubled in terms of your conscience for having a heart for national development, for helping others, for doing more? Are we positioning ourselves in the right direction?
So in my opinion, and I just want to make sure I state that in my opinion, I think that we aren't touching the right people for those conversations. And I want to compare it to when you work in a business organization. Let's say you have customer service representatives who talk and deal with your customers all day, every day. They're the people that you want to pull into a focus group. They're the people that you want to hear from what's happening with your customers, what your customers are saying, what are your customers liking, what don't they like, so you know what's going well, what things can be changed as well. And so I don't think that the people that we need at the table are actually at those tables. I believe that one, the wealth is staying in the same circles. I believe, two, that the influence is staying in the same circles and the same people are being drawn to the table over and over and over again. So it means that the conversations may be happening with those people, but there's just a lot of talking and not enough doing. We need to have some of the average Bahamians pulled into some of these conversations. We need the politicians for their constituencies to really sit down with their constituency members and hear from them. And while we may not be able to do everything that people say and every suggestion may not be valid, it does two things. It makes people feel seen and heard. And it also gives you access to information that you can work on, because the MP is actually employed by the people of his constituency or her constituency. And if we're not hearing from them, and are we creating enough avenues for them to come and share? And one of the things that will keep people from coming and sharing is not their suggestions or their advice or their comments not being acted on or even acknowledged. So I think it's a muddled pool. I think that it's going to take a lot of work to correct that pool. But I do believe that there are people that we need to pull into these conversations who aren't connected to the political party that's in now, or the people that they can have favor with. We need people that will bring real ideas, will address the real issues, will bring the real solutions, and we'll share the heart of really what's going on so that some proper solutions will be made. Now, there's a deepening of that conversation, though, Hubert, and that is simply that, is that what is wanted at a national level, mm-hmm. right? Is it something that is desired from those that run our country, whether this year, next year, 5 years, it doesn't matter. Do they really want to hear from the people? And I don't know if you recognize that our last election, I do believe that that was perhaps the lowest voter turnout. Indication that people are tired of talking, people are tired of the same thing over and over and over again, that they have silenced their voices. And when your best employee is silent, it means that they have tapped out. And so I believe that many citizens have tapped out. And that's the reason why some of these conversations aren't happening. That's the reason why so many people are just focused on themselves and their homes and their people, because they're just sick and tired of not being heard, not being seen, and not being worked for.
Mm. You talked earlier about wealth and influence, and I want to kind of touch on that just a little bit. If I take you back to the pre-1967 era, wealth and influence played a fundamental part in the way the country was run, in the lives of individuals, the lives of ordinary citizens, and the lives of some other groupings. In 2023, well, let's go back to 1973, the effort, the fight, the advocacy was for the rationalization of that wealth, the rationalization of that influence, to make it more widely available. And yes, that did happen. But would you agree, would you align with the thinking that as we look, sit here in 2023 and kind of glance our eyes back to 1967, it would appear that there is a reconcentration of those exact same things which, if you will, the freedom fighters fought for?
Well, again, in my opinion, I believe that the same groups of people that generated wealth while fighting for freedom, and they have a name, I just can't recall it right now, that grouping of people that generated wealth together that are wealthy today, them and their children and their children's children are still enjoying the fruits of their labor, I guess. That's the best way that I can put it. And they continue to, their lives continue to get richer and better. And so for me, it teaches me that community is important. And when I say community, is that those group of men came together and decided that they wanted to fight for our country, but they also wanted to improve their lives and the lives of their families. And so they fought for our country, but they also like opened businesses together. They all pooled money and this business, that business, the next business. They really established themselves. And today, many of them are still here and their businesses are still blooming and they're doing some of the same things that they did back then. To keep the wealth within their circle. I mean, again, this is my opinion. Mm-hmm. And it's really hard to break into that circle when it is a monopoly on that circle, which is why I believe many Bahamians get discouraged by the fact that it seems advanced more than others. And then again, that is attached to who you know. It is attached to who you have favor with. Some families have predominantly throughout every it doesn't matter which political party is in, some families still benefit more than other families and much more than other families in stature, in their income, in their access. And so, I mean, that's just what my opinion is. You know, there are other people fighting to break into that circle to create their own wealth and their own generational wealth for their families as well. But the road isn't so easy for them, particularly when there's a monopoly on certain things for certain families.
Yeah, and certainly, you know, you celebrate the persons who put themselves on the front line. You celebrate the persons who work hard so that other persons can benefit. At the end of the day, though, there's no question There's no question in my mind as I look around, as I observe, that there are persons who bend money. And the patrimony ought to be equal ownership across the populace, across the citizenry. But certainly there's persons who benefit more from the patrimony. But as we look forward, as we move from that, because the average individual, wherever he finds himself, whatever his circumstance, he cannot sit back and lament and say, hey, you know, I wasn't born in the right family, the things are not going my way. He has to start to work. And that is kind of the era that you have, you know, aligned yourself. You have taken up the stance of saying you are going to help, as you mentioned, predominantly women, but you work with teenagers and you work with other groupings. To help persons to understand that, you know, you have to pick up your own struggle. You have to pick up your own burden and you have to get up and walk. Talk to us about that and talk to us about why you do what you do.
But my belief is that we get examples of how to live from our first tribe, which is our families. We're born into families for a reason. And our families are supposed to be the first place that we're nurtured and supported and developed. And in our families, we get examples of things like motivation and how to accomplish goals, and we get examples of how to handle conflict. We get examples, and so as we're growing in our family pod, we're impressionable as young people. We are learning through our family pod how we will advance in life, or some of the things that we will advance in life. Now, here's the thing: two people could grow up in the same environment, and one could decide that I want something different for my life and use the examples as fuel to learn to live a better way or a different way. And then somebody else in that environment may take a victim perspective and say, oh, you know what? This is just how I was born in this environment. There's nothing greater for me. I can't do anything, and blame everybody and everything else except themselves. And so I believe that we, as a country, I believe people need to really understand how important that family unit is, how important what we do in that family unit, how that impacts the children that we are rearing, how what we say, what we do, and what our actions are telling our children. And when we take responsibility for the fact that as parents, our role is to groom citizens and contributing citizens of our country, and we begin to align our actions that demonstrate to them that there are certain things that you can do to advance your life. I believe that more people would have that drive and more people would have that exact motivation. You know, coming from a family, like I said, you know, I don't know what it is to experience severe hunger, to have lack of food or basic shelter. I do not know what that looks like or feels like personally, but I have witnessed it throughout my work on how it impacts other people. And one of the things that I know is super important is that in order to change your life, the very first thing that you have to do is go through the process of evolution. That's your own personal evolving of your thoughts, your minds, your patterns. Be willing to sit with yourself and see how your actions are either working for your good or working against you. And depending on what you see, you now have a decision to make about what I want to do. Because just as you work in an organization, you work at that organization, you impact the culture of that organization. It's not just the leader's responsibility to cultivate a positive work culture. Similarly, in our country, everybody impacts the country, and it's everybody's responsibility to cultivate themselves in a manner in which they can either help someone in their home or someone in their community, someone in their workplace also advance. That's more about what community is about. And I can also tell you that there are certain motivating factors. And if we look at it, and we're probably going to touch this subject at some point, but there are some nationalities that reside within us that experience extreme lack, and they have migrated to find a better way of life. They work hard to put their children, they send their children through college, they sacrifice and do whatever is necessary so so that their children doesn't have to be broken the way that they were broken, and they have access to other things. And I know that there are some Bahamian families that come together and do the exact same thing as well. We need more of that. We need more of people saying, my kids, or I grew up in a family and we had it hard, and so I want better for my children. Before I got formally educated, my kids were formally educated, because there was one thing that I knew. I knew that education opened the door. When you add manners and personability and a good character to that, it opens the door and it helps to bring favor to you. Like, how you represent yourself can bring favor to you. And so there was a lot of sacrifice involved in making sure that they were college educated so that they can make better decisions. And I believe that everyone has to take responsibility for guiding their children and being parents, and not coddling their children, but encouraging their children and setting the right example for them as well. Why do I do the things that I do, Hubert? Simply because I went through a number of situations in my life that gave me a lot of lessons. I learned that not everybody understands the concept of parenting, and that we do have to extend grace at times. People do what they can do. They do the best that they know how to at times, but when you know better, you do better. And so, because I know that not everybody learns that foundation, because there were things that I struggled with as a teenager, the work that we do with teenagers is designed to help them, to help fill the gaps and fill the voids, because parents are busy. Yes, I understand that. And that's where community comes in. I remember being a little girl running around in my community, and anyone could ask me, you finish your homework yet? If I did something wrong, anyone in my community could reprimand me and then tell my parents, and I get reprimanded again. And so I believe that community is also important in how we can help other people advance in life and in their careers and advance our country. And so a lot of the work that my people is helping to build self-esteem, self-value, helping to enforce or reinforce some things with young people, like being a leader and not a follower, about how to handle conflict so that we don't have as much crime. A lot of children are rearing themselves. And so what do we expect if they don't have the right guidance? And so we do our best to help them understand social issues, help them understand how to navigate the internet safely, help them understand how to groom themselves properly, because these are all vital lessons for success, and help them to build their personal brand, because their personal brand is the stamp that they put on every interaction with every single person. I work with women specifically because I was broken as a woman. I've been through relationships that took me to nothing. I've been through relationships that I held on to when I really should have released those relationships, because all growing up, the things that we're taught as little girls is to find a man, to get married, to have children, is a societal pressure to do all of these things. And we focus on all of those things, on becoming the best people that we can be first, so that when we find suitable mates, we know exactly what we're looking for, who we are compatible with, and who we should be in alignment with. When we don't have drama, the less drama we have, the more we can focus on moving forward. However, being in relationship and having to deal with a lot of drama that's involved in relationships with people that we shouldn't be in alignment with is something that is keeping women shackled. And so it's a lot of the work that we do is in helping them again build the foundation of who they are. Everything starts with who you are. Every single thing starts with who you are. And then with the cancer survivors, this work is so important to me. And I didn't know that it would be as important as it is to me when I first started working with this group, because, Hubert, in all honesty, I just stepped in to fill a shoe that was left void when my mom passed away. I didn't think that this was something that I would be committed to, because this was my mom's thing, and I would just fill in until they found a leader. But as I began to serve, and who had battled a disease that, I mean, battle right back hard. Some of them really had to fight for their lives. There's a brokenness in that. You know, there's a brokenness in travailing with illness. You start to question, who am I? Why did God allow this to happen to me? When you see the scars that are on your body, you start to question, And there's this self-love that needs to be reestablished. There are those mental games and mental battles that need to be resolved so that there could be full healing and not just physical healing. And so this work with the cancer community became more important to me than any other aspect of work that I was doing, because it's important that these women become whole again and not be ashamed of their journey. And not just not be ashamed of their journey, but also understand that they are whole beings. They are physical, they are mental, they are emotional, they are spiritual, and that all of these components of them are still lovable and are still valuable after a fight with cancer. And that has become one of my passions recently. So it's all about building other people, because as we build people, they can build other people. And as they build other people, they'll have an impact beyond my reach to help with nation building.
Yeah. And you know, what you're saying really is a microcosm of the way we ought to see national life, the way we ought to see our contribution, the way we ought to be intentional in identifying individuals or identifying persons who are in need of pursuing their own wholeness, whether that wholeness is economic, social, whether that wholeness is about educational. But we have to, as a country and as individuals within the country who have traversed various journey like yourself, you said you have been broken, you learn. But those of us who have the capability and the capacity to do must come together and must see it not simply as helping one person in the moment, but maybe contributing generationally to the change of a family, to the change of a community, to the total change of circumstance of an individual who then may contribute even more significantly than we were able to. Isn't this the type of approach that we need to see at all national, at all levels of national life, not just at the political level, but certainly in the schools, in the church, in the community, wherever it is that people congregate as communities? Isn't this with that which is required?
I think so. I believe that the more people that engage in mentoring others, the more our experiences can help those who desire to be mentored, because let's just be real, everybody doesn't want mentorship. But for those who want to be mentored, who crave to know a better way, who want to use the experiences of a mentor's wisdom and use their mentor's mistakes as ways to get to their end results smoother, faster, more efficiently, those are the people that we should elect to pour into. We should not be saying that because we had it hard, other people need to have it hard too, and they can learn the hard way or they can learn their way. If there is someone with a teachable spirit, we can pour ourselves into and not create mini-me's. We're not trying to create people that mimic us. We're trying to cultivate that person's individuality and to extract from that person what they believe that they have been born to achieve, to do, and help them set on the road to do exactly that by using our experiences to teach them what the things are that they should avoid and what the things are that they can work on, and to use our connections to help open doors and opportunities for them. I believe that we could see a more advanced Bahamas if more people engaged in such activities.
Yeah. You spoke earlier of the migrant population, if you will, persons who have come to this country by whatsoever means, and they have figured out a way to struggle with the view of making their lives better, making the lives of their offspring better. When we look around, you know, we scour the news, we listen to what has been happening over the years, sense that as a country, the Bahamas need to be a little bit more intentional in how it seeks to drive social cohesiveness. Because there seems to be a potential, which I, in my own view, figure that it could be a very expensive potential, where too many persons, because they may have injected themselves from outside the normal definition of what the Bahamian community represents, they get left behind and therefore in the long run become becomes a burden on the Bahamas when the discovery is that they actually now do legally belong to the Bahamas. Social cohesiveness, what do you think, how do you think we should be focusing in that era more, if any?
So picture this. You're born in the Bahamas, and at 18, it's your right to apply for citizenship, and the process takes years. During the time that this process is going on, you can't open a bank account, you can't get a Bahamian passport, or you can't get the driver's license. Like, there are so many restrictions on what you can and cannot do. Like, when you are going to be employed at an organization, they want your passport, they want your police record, they want your NIB number, all of these things are required for employment. But if this person who at 18 has the right to apply and the process is a tedious process, what are they supposed to do for work? One, work under the table, or two, get involved in criminal activities that can help them find funds to support their lives and the lives of their families. This is just a real conversation here, but like, their hands are tied. Now, I will say to you that I believe more can be done, again, from a national level to curb some immigration. I believe that I believe that a lot of our country was built on the backs of immigrants. I believe that came in, and currently, even today, like, there are people that do jobs that Bahamians may find as menial. You find more people in the landscaping realm or the construction realm. You find that hard labor work is filled with immigrants or descendants of immigrants, right? And so I believe that they can help with building our nation, but I believe that there is a right way to do things. I believe that the process should be followed. At the same time, I believe that the process should be made a little bit more efficient and also transparent, so that those who are born here and have the right to apply for citizenship are given the access that they need and the support that they need, which I believe would help to minimize some of the other activities that are negatively impacting our communities as well. We do have an out-of-control migrant problem. That's my personal belief. It is out of control. I also understand that, you know, when you sit in a situation where, you know, you just have no hope and you run from take your life, you're looking for a lifeline, you're looking for something to hold on to, but at the same time, it can't be to the detriment of a country. So I believe that there's a right way and there's a right process for this, for the processing of immigrants, so that we have a better handle on this situation. And I believe also that if we begin to bridge community, again, I come back to this word community, one, they wouldn't have to hide from us. And two, if we build community, then we can work along with each other despite the bloodline. Because, you know, Bahamians can be very biased. Bahamians can be very prejudiced. That's just a reality. And this is an attitude that was cultivated in many of us, because I remember growing up in a household that was not supportive of migrants. And so some of the things that we believe have been really ingrained in us throughout the majority of our lives, but this is coming to a head and something has to be done. Otherwise, I believe that we're on the bridge of a crisis.
One of the comes up for discussion as we get into the 50 years, and which I believe is something which ought to be grappled with after 50 years, is the issue around equality as it relates to gender. And by gender, I mean male, female. The Bahamas has yet to reach a situation where there is a settled status as to how citizenship is passed. There are instances where there is differences between male and female. And a country which has been on a journey and get to year 50, it is my view that sufficient time would have passed for this not to be the way it is. And certainly when you put it within the context of what 2023 represents within a global landscape, there are some work, there is some work which certainly the country has to do at this point in time as it moves beyond the 50th celebration?
Well, stand on the premise that the Bahamas is a Christian nation. I mean, you hear that all the time. The Bahamas is a Christian nation. The Bahamas is a Christian nation. And in many ways, it's factual, and in some ways, it's very hypocritical. I believe that people have the right to make choices for their lives, and that's any individual. That could be you, that could be me, that could be Susie down the road. I believe everyone has a right of choice. I believe that whatever your values are, you should be able to hold on to what you believe is right for you and your values. At the same time, though, I also believe that there are rules that govern community. Mm-hmm. And I believe that while everyone has the right to make those choices, everyone should also have the ability to stand on what they believe is their right. So if somebody is saying, hey, listen, I want to be identified as a she, they have a right to do that. But if there's somebody else that is saying, hey, that's a guy, I'm going to call you a he, my value standard is that I believe in two pronouns, he and she, that person also has a right to stand on R. I believe that agreements are what are necessary for cohesiveness, but not just cohesiveness, but to avoid conflict. So there has to be a stance from a national perspective. There has to be some rules that need to be followed in order for all people to coexist regardless of their beliefs. And not because you take a Christian stance means that your stance is superior to somebody that doesn't take a Christian stance, because at the end of the day, it is a personal decision. And as Christian, it is a personal relationship that you build. So everyone has the right of choice. We can't force anything on anyone. We can't force somebody saying, hey, you know, I'm gay, I'm bisexual, I hope those words are okay. Whatever they choose to be, that is their choice. But they also have a responsibility to coexist in a community that says, okay, if we're talking about diversity, diversity is all inclusive, and that includes the person that does not believe in what you hold true to you. But how do we work? How do we say we agree to disagree and move forward with a common goal versus trying to convince the other person to take a side or to get into heated battles? Or, I mean, how do we move forward is the question. And I believe that there are some guidelines and rules that need to be made and tabled so that citizens of the country can, not that we always uphold the law, but understand what the law is, and everyone can have their perspective and their rights respected.
Yeah. As we listen to DeQuessa Dean put her views forward as to how she see the growth and the development of the Bahamas over the last 50 years or so. Well, she can't really speak to 50, but you know, how she has seen it over the last couple of years. And certainly some points of view as to how we should be working to develop ourselves, to develop others, to contribute, and to do that within the vein of national development. Because an individual, a citizen, a better citizen, a more productive citizen, a more contributing citizen, then certainly you are contributing to national development. We're going to take a break here, and when we come back, we're going to cast our eyes to the future. What are some of the things that she wished to see? What are some of the things that she wanted to hear? And of course, I certainly can't end the show without we dropping a line or two, because Black Samurais are someplace out there and we have to speak to them. You listen to The Essentials. You won't get that until she explains, but you listen to The Essentials. I don't want you to move. I want you to come right back. This is The Essentials, The Reset. Don't move.
On the go? Missed the show? You can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify, searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, or by entering the name of your favorite show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere, anytime, all day.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Next Level Solutions. Next Level Solutions. Solutions. At Next Level Solutions, we assist companies and organizations to understand and strategically resolve governance, risk, compliance, regulatory, finance, and operational challenges, maximize their performance, and grow. Next Level Solutions, a dynamic consultancy built on experience. For further details on our service offerings, visit nlsolutionsbahamas.com or call 376-8951. Next Level Solutions. Practical solutions delivered.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Come to you, you gave me food, clothes, and protection too. You said don't worry about a thing, just show your loyalty, it's the comfort that you'll bring. When I look around, I got tables and backboard working on my visa, a song on visa. A lady tells me, send for family, she can clean me out, and I am the clothes for me. Comfort gets you all. It's a comfort that you think. This matter is serious. We don't know what it will bring. Comfort that you want. We must regulate this thing. Comfort that you want.
Welcome back to The Essentials, The Reset. We're having a conversation in our independence series, or the Road to Independence series. But we have styled it The Road Beyond 50 because we want to cast our eyes beyond the moment of celebration. And the main reason for this is I believe that whatsoever is going to be celebrated on July 10, 2023, as for the most part already crystallized, happened, done. And so the question is, after the celebration, what next? We have another 50 years to go before we get to year 100, and the focus has to be there. So while we strategize for the future. So the question, as you cast your eyes beyond the 50th year, what are some of the things that you are looking at? What are some of the things that you're hoping for? Some of the things which you would desire to see changes made, learning from missteps as we move forward?
But and they really both connect to young people. Well, let me say three things. And one is with the elderly. And so one of the things that I would love to see happen is to plug the Bahamian brain drain. That means that our young people are going off to college and are not returning home to help with nation building. And I completely get it. I completely understand that you go to college, you study, you spend money and you come back home and you're being forced into an entry-level position, or you're being forced to work in organizations where they advance people by years of service versus capability. And so, yes, I get it. So I do think that a lot of attention needs to be paid to needs for young people to bring their expertise back to the Bahamas and build the Bahamas. The other thing is I'd love to see more focus on directing young people to some of the trade careers, such as plumbing and construction and being electricians and beauticians and those sorts of things. Not everyone wants a career in corporate Bahamas. Some people want to have those trades as careers, and I believe our attitude surrounding those trade jobs firstly need to be adjusted, because those people make a ton of money. And so we really need to provide more opportunities. And I celebrate the fact that BTBI is offering some courses that allow people to develop these skill sets. So I would love to see more focus on getting more of those trades and people certified in those trades. And then the final thing I'd like to see some advancement in is how do we now take the lessons from our more experienced and mature citizens and keep them involved. I mean, at 65, you're really too young to go home. It contradicts my statement that there needs to be more opportunities for young people. At the same time, though, we also need a balance of having our more mature citizens who add value and bring experience and can help guide those younger people in their careers to also be given the opportunity or be given positions and opportunities that can help cultivate those partnerships. And so those are the three things that I would love to see. I believe if we get more young people home with their expertise, so much in this country could change if we allow them the opportunity to operate in their giftedness or their purpose to impact their change without being shackled by outdated and antiquated rules. Mm-hmm. That would be awesome. And then, of course, also creating avenues, not just for our more mature people to contribute, but also more things for them to do. Like when you retire, what is there to do? How do we now cultivate a space for retirees or our more mature people so that they can continue being involved in community, continue with community building? And we respect them. We respect what they bring to the table because they've been here so much longer and navigated so much and have so much experience. How do we keep them involved in nation building?
And I think that is important. But we have to rethink the way we see the elders. And as you speak of opportunity for the young, it does not automatically translate into this opportunity, if that's a word, or lack of opportunity for the elder, in that it doesn't necessarily require an individual who has reached the age of 65 to step out of a particular seat or step out of a particular space for a young person to come through. What we need to be high, because in exchanging one seat for another and putting some persons out to pasture is certainly not a way to maximize, in my mind, the use of a very limited population. The Bahamas has a very small number of professionals. So generally speaking, compared to most other countries, a number of other countries within the region, and certainly some of the big countries in the world, we need to squeeze out everything that we can as long as persons are willing, for as long as we can. And so we have to look at it from that perspective. Duquesa, in a not so long time ago, we had the pleasure of congregating with a group of young men. And I think this is important because it really speaks to the future and it speaks to where we are today. And out of that particular congregation, there was a memorable group, and I'm being biased here, referred to as the Black Samurais. And yeah. From that experience, I coined a few things. We, of course, very nice jingle going, Black Samurai ho. We are warriors, we are champion, we are Black Samurai. And I have a question which I have posed to a group in generally, and I think it's useful to pose to us here in this conversation, and certainly to the persons listening, as we think about national development and the struggles that we face on a day-to-day basis. Are you a warrior? Or are you one who simply accepts life as it comes? If you had to die, in quotes, not physical death, if you had to die to save your own life, would you be willing to do so? Is your lack of success in life a function of your unwillingness to die to the things which are holding you back? How important, and we draw this from your group in Duquesa, your group of young men who name themselves Black Samurai, and saying that they're willing to do whatsoever was necessary, ethically, legally, morally, to win the prize on the day, our national growth going forward. And I believe I want you to spend a little bit of a moment just to talk to us, to talk to the persons out there, how you can rethink rethink your approach and therefore change your commitment to growing yourself and contributing to national life?
I believe that many people sit in overwhelm and are not certain how to move forward, which is basically called being stuck. And that's why it's important, first of all, to get up under mentorship, which is what that event was all about. That event was giving boys the opportunity to connect with men and be mentored by men. But any individual out there who finds themselves stuck, I want to encourage you first and foremost to inspect who you are as an individual. And that's not from a judging perspective. That's from the perspective of knowing who you are. Because I dare say, Hubert, so many of us don't know who we are. And I once sat in that category of being the person that could give the environment what it needed, to being a chameleon and being what my friends needed, being what my work needed for me. So the very first step that I would encourage people to do to get out of overwhelm and to become unstuck is to inspect who they are at the core of themselves. At the core of you, who are you? Void of all of your titles, void of all of your positions, void of all of the things that you do to fill you. Who are you? Are you a person of integrity? Are you a person that's honest, that's personal, that's likable? Write down the adjectives that relate to who you are. And if you look on that paper and you recognize that, okay, what I put here is not sufficient or not enough for me to be that warrior, to chase my dreams, to achieve my goals, then what do I need to do? And the answer to that question is to build a foundation of who you are. You are already created to be successful. Abundance is available to all of us. It takes work to get it, to achieve it, and we have to be willing to put the work in. The first set of work that we have to put in is to get out of victimhood and step into our power by inspecting who we are and building who we are, so that when we're deeply rooted in who we are, the forces that are out there, that's the voices of us we may have navigated that hurt us, that could be our own negative self-talk, we can unshackle ourselves from those things because we're so grounded in who we are that we could move forward confidently.
And that is so, so important. Out of this event, which was put on and managed by Duquesa Dean, certainly, we had young men, and I had the opportunity, the privilege really, of being with a group. That same group was the Black Samurai. They turned out to be the winner. I'm being very biased. But, you know, it caused me, Duquesa, to go back and ask myself, why did they come up with that name? And what's the relevance? Because when we think about a samurai, we think about a warrior. And in my research of that, regardless of what you think about samurai, I have learned, I hope that this is correct, but I'm running with this. But I've learned that the word samurai simply means one who serves. So it's a warrior who serves. And so we have some questions to ask ourselves. Who are you serving? What cause are you serving at this point in time for national growth and development? How loyal of yourselves and others? And are you willing to die, again in quotes, not physically, are you willing to die so that others can win? What I experienced from those 10 young men whose table I shared that day was that they were willing to die to their own personal desires, their own selfishness, if you will, right? Such that the entire grouping, the 10 of them, could be successful. And then I look again at the issue of a samurai and some of the guiding principles around them. And I believe that these are principles which are useful for national development, for the individual engaging in national development. And the first one is righteousness. Justice is paramount to the samurai. We have to live in a world and we have to live in a way where justice means something to us. Loyalty is the second most important thing in the life of a samurai. Honor, a life without honor is not a life as far as a samurai is concerned. And then there is respect. Respect must be shown even to your enemies. Honesty. A samurai never lies, so it says. I don't know, they're human, so there must be some frailty in there. But the message is there. We have to live with integrity. Honesty is important. And then this is the big one, Duquesa, which I want you to comment on. Courage. the strength to fight until the end. Certainly, as you mentioned, at some point in time, you categorize it, you were a broken person. The courage to lift yourself up, to fight for that, and to now fight for others. How important is courage in this whole process?
That courage is vital to the process. It takes courage to speak out. It takes courage to go take your own path in a world that's encouraging you to take a beaten path. So it takes courage, but courage is also something that's cultivated. Mm-hmm. It may start out weak, but the more you take action, the more you have those micro wins, the more courageous you get. So it's important then that you set yourself up to have those micro wins by taking small steps initially. Take those small steps that aren't so scary. And as you begin to take those small steps that aren't so scary, you'll be more willing to take giant steps that seem scary. But because you've done it and you've seen that it's possible, those giant steps are now just saying, you know what? Whether I fail or succeed, doing something is already a success. Taking action is already success. So build courage gradually so that you're not afraid to do the things that you know you want to do.
And the seventh and final one that I found is consistency. How important is it to be consistent in whatever it is we're doing, but certainly as we seek to put ourselves out for contribution for national life, as we seek to contribute to a better world, to make the Bahamas a better place beyond the 50th year, how important is that?
Well, I think it's John C. Maxwell who said that success is actually the result of daily consistent action. So there's no success without consistency. Mm-hmm. But we live in a world where people want instant results, and it's also termed microwave results. We live in a world where people may do something for a week and expect to see results, but results will take time. Consistent action, in spite of what may look like there's no progress, just keeping the time, being consistent will eventually lead you to the place of success. But being consistent at a plan, this isn't just random consistency. It means that there's a plan that you're following to build yourself, to build your family, to build your nation. It's not random. So you can only take consistent daily steps when you are following a plan, and that plan is your guide.
Definitely, and we are clean out of time. We could have this conversation going all night. I tell you, there's no question that Duquesa Dean can speak for 24 hours straight, and you will enjoy listening to her for all the time. But we are clean out of time. Duquesa, I want to thank you for being a part of this program this evening. It was certainly a pleasure. We learned a lot from you. We share your excitement. We share your energy. And so your final word in 30 seconds.
Thank you for the opportunity to be here. And to anyone out there that's navigating a challenge, just know that it's not the end of the road. Tie a knot, hang on, and find help. Resources are available for you. Let's build our country one person at a time.
Definitely. And I always tell persons, you know, if you can wrap yourself in the flag, if you can attach yourself, whatever the lens of contributing to your country, contributing to national life, contributing to national development. A story goes where an individual was seen. I think he was cutting bricks. And when asked, you know, what you're doing? He said he was building a pristine castle or something to that effect. He didn't see his bricks simply as the bricks, but the way in which they were going to be used. We ask you, this evening, as you think about independence coming, become a warrior, become a samurai. Attach yourself to a cause, attach yourself to a purpose, and work diligently, work courageously, work consistently, no matter how small it seems, to grow and develop in that era. And as you do so, always remember to work so that you can uplift some others, because through you, great things can happen. At the end of the day, all that is left to say is, as we always end the show, do not allow your greatness to become a victim of your unwillingness to change. One love, good night, and Ubuntu.
Ubuntu.